What is up, world?
What's going on?
Welcome to the 35th episode of Movie Schmovie. This is our podcast, film review, baby, child, offspring.
We take good care of this thing.
Try to, at least.
Yeah.
This is kind of a follow-up episode. We talked a little bit about, in episode 34, mainly about the Avengers, but we did tag it a little bit, talking about the Maryland Film Festival, which was this past weekend here in Baltimore City. And it was the 14th annual film festival. A lot of great talent there. Some really incredible films on display. We saw a few. Not as many as we had liked to see.
Which sucks.
And one of the films that we really wanted to see, which was Dark Horse, we were unable to get into because of it basically selling out and being on a wait list immediately.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we're not, like, the cream of the crop in the press world, you know.
Not yet, at least.
We just don't get any kind of special treatment yet.
We will. We will.
Anyway, we did still make the best of the weekend. Make the best of the weekend and did see a couple interesting films. We're going to talk about, like, a couple of them and during this episode, our reactions to them, a little bit of background, what the plans are for these films post-festival. And tell you guys about them. We're going to talk about three films in specific, I think.
Yeah.
Which are basically VHS, Save the Date, and the film Jeff.
Jeff.
And we're going to kick it off because this was probably the one that I feel like you and I were both most anticipating.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was VHS.
VHS.
It's a, what do you call this?
It's a horror anthology.
A horror anthology. Yeah. Think Tales from the Crypt.
Right, right.
And this basically takes place, what time period is this?
It's not super clear. I mean, it's in a, you see some of the technology that's present. It's got to be, you know, at least in the 2000s, we don't see an exact time. I think some of the video footage, you see dates flash, but it's, there's not consistency in, because you don't know how old some of that footage is.
Right. So a band of hooligans are sent to a house.
Yeah, hooligans.
Hooligans. And so they go to this house, and they are commissioned to find a film.
A VHS tape.
And as they go in, they quickly find out that there are multiple tapes, and they start watching them. And this is the anthology that kind of takes place. Now, to make this even more interesting, this is a collective sort of work. There are five directors that did this. One of them, David Bruckner, Glenn Quaid.
McQuaid.
Radio Silence, Ty West, and Joe Swanberg.
Yeah, and Adam Wingard as well.
Adam Wingard. So Adam Wingard did the wraparounds.
Yeah, so basically the idea is that, I mean, kind of, if you remember, like, films like Creepshow, I don't know, I think a Creepshow, like, from the 80s, as a kid watching that, there's basically a wraparound element, which is, like Ronald said, is about these hooligans that have been commissioned.
Literally, you like that word. It's a good word.
It is a good word. I'm gonna use it throughout the whole podcast.
Good.
To find this VHS tape, you know, they're trying to make money. These are jerks. These are guys that you would see on an episode of Jackass, probably. The film starts off with them doing shit like that.
Right.
And, you know, they're making, you know, pennies and dimes, shooting upskirt stuff and, you know, basically assaulting women in public and, you know, taking their tops off. And one of them says, hey, I got this big score. We're going to find this tape. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is go in this old man, his house, you know, whatever. Easy money. And that's our wraparound. So we get to that point with them. And at that stage in the film, we see that there's not just one VHS here. And in their search for the VHS, the members of this group, they're kind of basically viewing films that they find in a room. You know, where there's stacks of televisions, you know, there's stacks of tapes, and an old man dead in the room.
Dead, just
Just sitting in a chair. I don't know how long he's been there, but, I mean, that's kind of where we're at. And that's what gets us to where we're seeing the anthology piece of it, which are, you know, the four or five little films that take place, you know, by the directors that Ronald mentioned. Something to keep in mind, though. I mean, a lot of these directors are kind of very well known in the horror world, especially the independent horror world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys like Glenn McQuaid did I Sell the Dead. Ty West is pretty popular for films like Innkeepers and House of the Devil.
Cabin Fever 2.
Cabin Fever 2. you know, and even Adam Wingard, he's got a big film coming out called You're Next, which was a big hit at the festival circuit this past year that I think Lionsgate is putting out. Yeah. It's supposed to be incredible. But the idea is that, you know, somebody who, you know, decided, hey, and that somebody actually is Brad Miska from Buddy Disgusting, the news site, like the horror movie news site. He basically, this is his idea, like he produced and put the film out. You know, hey, let's get all these great filmmakers together and make these little standalone films. And it's like, oh, well, how do we get them films together in one film? And it's like, oh, let's have this wraparound. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we get to it. And, I mean, the content of each film is, you know, it's very different from one another. I mean, they're all obviously horror-related, thriller-related.
Right.
All kind of give you some sorts of dread, which, you know, that's the hard thing to do with a good horror film is to produce pure dread, you know, as opposed to just having, like, things jump out and scare you. It's like, what you're waiting for is what's scarier than what you already see or know.
Right.
And, you know, I guess the five different films do it, you know, on different levels, successful here, unsuccessful there. But I don't know. What did you think? I know you have some strong feelings about this.
Right,
so let's just air that out right now.
So one of the things that is going to strike you immediately when you see this movie is that the name of the movie is VHS. But some of the shorts have strange things in them, like Skype conversations, which obviously isn't a VHS sort of thing.
Right.
And then differences in the quality of the film. So one of the things you'll notice is that some of them are really shitty looking, and then some of them are almost like DVD quality.
Okay.
For the video. So I guess one of that bothers me, I guess that should be some consistency. I mean, I know that there's differences in quality for VHS camera to VHS camera. But obviously, it isn't going to be that good a quality. And that was weird. It didn't really sit well with me. And I mean, I guess the whole idea is if you're going to commit to an idea, which is show these VHS tapes,
right.
Why can't it be consistent? Why can't it be some uniformity to at least the quality of the videos? Because that's what makes it so cool.
So your issue is like more so with the quality of what we're watching?
Yeah. And
because basically, as these guys put the tapes in, we see the tape as if we're watching it, you know, as them. Right. So you're saying, like, the quality of each tape is what bothered you.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the issues.
Right.
One of the issues. This is obviously, since it's VHS, it's found footage, POV sort of stuff. That, to me, is to me, harder to do now. I mean, because so many stories have been told in this perspective now that you kind of have to bring something new to the table. And I think that some of them did. Some of them didn't.
I don't know. I guess I didn't get affected by it as much as you did.
I was super affected by it.
I know you even used the term insulted at one point.
I was insulted.
I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, like we mentioned earlier, like you kind of assume it's taking place sometime in the 2000s or whatever. But I don't know. I guess when you see that, because one of the cool things is that you kind of get introduced to different elements about how this stuff was recorded. Like there's a Skype conversation. You know, there's a situation where, like, the guy has a pair of glasses that has a camera on it. And then the rest of them are pretty much, you know, a handheld camera kind of deal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it didn't really hit me because, I mean, I guess what I assume and what I just kind of go with is that we're watching them on a VHS because at some point these anthology pieces, these short films, these horrible pieces of work were put onto a VHS. You know, whether it was by this man, however he, this old guy that's dead, or whatever else is at work in this house.
But you're making excuses for it, though. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I guess, I mean, I'm not making excuses. I don't know, maybe I am making excuses. I guess there's just two sides to it, because, I mean, I think with a film like this that has a wraparound like that, and let me ask you this. If you just went in and the films went back to back to back without the wraparound, would it have affected you as much?
No.
If there was no element of VHS?
No, it wouldn't have.
Right, okay. So that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that you're more so affected by the format that they're watching and the film's title.
And it was presented that way. Like, it's found footage on VHS tapes. So I assume that it was at least filmed on the VHS tapes that
the old school tapes.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little strange.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I definitely, it's a valid concern. I mean, I think more than a couple, you know, viewers are going to probably make a comment like that.
Right. And then
it just didn't, I don't know, it just didn't bother me.
And then another thing that bothered me was like the constant nudity in it, man. Like, I'm a big fan of breasts.
Of boobs, and yeah.
Boobs. But like, something about this felt very like, I don't know, man.
The awkward silence.
I don't want to use the word misogyny. It was real.
The boobs got bigger, too, as the
they got bigger and bigger, right, which was important to me. If you're going to show boobs, they may as well get bigger. But one of the things that bothered me was, like, this was a recurring thing. Like, I think that it should have... I think that you can have scary, you can have really uncomfortable without having the constant disrespect of women. This right. felt like disrespect after a while. Like,
right.
a little bit of nudity is cool. And then after a while, it's like, whoa, whoa, like... I'm good. I like porn, in fact. And this is weird to me. This is weird to me.
That's interesting.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it felt... That's why the lady... All right, so one of the things that we stayed for was a Q&A towards
right,
the end.
Right, sure, sure. There was... And, a, yeah, Joe Swanberg was there to host the film. He directed one of the segments, which was the Skype segment.
Right.
And Joe Swanberg also starred in the segment directed by Ty West.
Right.
With the actress that was there with him, you know, right. doing the Q&A.
Now... There was this underlying sort of discomfort that she had there. And it might have been the whole idea that as an isolated film, hers wasn't that bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one that she was in about right, the stranger that kept watching over
yeah,
the hotel.
Yeah, the couple on like a
but
vacation.
What may have happened is she may have seen this as a whole and been like, what was all of that? Like, it gets kind of weird, like...
It was kind of awkward. Like, she definitely kind of gave off a vibe that she wasn't satisfied with the film. Or
right.
Didn't like the
it's
film.
It, because there was so much, like, it was, like, constant stuff. Like, it was weird. Like, it, I don't know. Like, it, I think you can have scary and have uncomfortable without having potential rape.
Right.
Constant nudity. You know what I mean? It just was weird to me. Like, I think we've gotten to a point now where nudity for... The sake of nudity has become kind of almost on drawing a line in terms of like what's too disrespectful, what's
right.
too weird in terms of female nudity, what's too weird in terms of how often we're putting women in these positions and in an hour and a half or 2 hour movie, like mm-hmm. fuck, like how I mean it's almost like torture porn, almost like how much can you have before it becomes uncomfortable for the watcher, and I have the utmost respect for women, and it just became very uncomfortable for me. And I love titties.
See, I'm going to sound like an asshole now. My response is I didn't kind of get any kind of like vibe like it was making
it was,
women bad. I mean, because in most of the segments, the women are the power players.
But that's
in the end.
it was almost presented like a all right. So that's the funny thing. It's presented like that, but really, at the heart of it, it's almost like a little kid was like, we're going to put boobies in it. And they're like, well, to make it not seem like boobies are that disrespectful, let's have a win at the end. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's yeah. just kind of weird that it's kind of like the yin and yang, but it's the amount of nudity is so imbalanced that females winning at the end doesn't
right.
make up for the fact that it's so weird.
Right.
So, like... I didn't get why she was so weird at first, but now I get it. Like, it's not that cool to do that for so long in a movie. Like, it was like every fucking movie was like titties, 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 titties.
Well, I think
titties.
There was actually only nudity in like two or three of them.
But still, it was the wraparound.
Yeah, very, yeah.
The Skype conversation had nudity
the
in
Skype.
It. The hotel had nudity in
right.
it. The guy was trying to get the woman to take her breasts out in the hotel. It was
yeah.
like, come on. Like, it was weird.
Okay. Boobs aside. I mean, I can see where you're coming with it. I didn't really kind of, I guess, I don't know. I think you had to, I feel like the important thing with this film is context. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that, like, you're looking at independent horror filmmakers. Like, if you look at any independent horror film, like, nudity is all over the place because it's not a mainstream film.
Right.
And they can do that. And, like, that's what the audience wants.
Totally.
And, like, the primary demo that watches these films, that's what they want. That's what sells tickets. That's what gets distribution. That's what makes these filmmakers
right.
successful.
But there's...
So that's why it's there.
It's there, but there's a... But if... So here's my big thing. The quality of the entire thing as a whole... I think that there's a really big issue with kind of giving yourself the label of a filmmaker. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. It's almost like the same idea as people that are musicians.
Yeah.
The fact that you can get this equipment and make things doesn't necessarily mean that what's happened essentially is that because you can just give someone a camera and have them make something. The quality of things as a whole, indie distribution has become, they feed off of this percentage of filmmakers that make really questionable quality things. Like, it's just like, kind of on the half. Like, I'm not saying all this stuff is like that, mm-hmm. but I feel like there's a lot that could have been cut out of this movie. Like, there's a half an hour to 40 minutes of this entire movie that could have been cut out. Now, the whole idea of it being VHS is absolutely incredible, but it could have seen 40 minutes slashed out of this movie, and it would have made it a leaner movie, which in turn would have made it more acceptable for me to kind of see these tapes and then not feel like forever.
Well, a lot of that time that's spent, like, in each tape is kind of like setting up the character. Right. You know, like, where you're like, oh, well, that could have taken 5 minutes, but it took 15 or 20. You're like, yeah, that's true. You know, if you just want to get to the punchline, like, each film, even though it's its own little short film, it still follows the same structure of filmmaking. You know, there's a first, second, and third act. Like, mm-hmm. there's purpose to it, and or at least trying to show that there is. I mean, and I think that's there for a reason. I mean, I don't know. I guess we're kind of just seeing it the very differently. I mean, I think in terms of some of the anthology pieces, I think the strongest ones, personally, and this—I don't know—you can throw yours out there. Were probably the first and the last. One was called Amateur's Night. That's the one that's in the hotel. The three guys. The one guy has the glasses with the camera.
I like that one.
I think that's probably the best one of the film. Only because it's because of its pacing. I think was an issue with that. Like, there wasn't slow builds. Like, right. You know, it didn't feel like you needed to cut a ton of that out. There was humor in it. There was a little nudity in it. There was dread in it. Like, you know, something bad was happening with this character, the girl that these guys meet. And I think it was done really well, and it ends on a strong note. The last one is called 10-31-98. It's a date. About a group of four guys that go to this Halloween party at this haunted house that apparently turns out to be, like, the most haunted house ever. And they get upstairs, and, like, they see these demonic, like, rituals taking place and all this shit. And it's just really cool. It moves so fast. Like, it does. Like, the wheels are off on that one.
Right, right.
Like, you literally go right into it. And, like, you're at the end of it, and you're like, what the hell just happened? But it's a fun ride.
It is a fun ride.
Like, on a shoestring budget, that one has some really impressive special effects as well.
Very, very.
And I never even heard of these guys, Radio Silence. They're the guys that directed the last one. They're apparently, you know, these filmmakers based out of L.A. that are, I think they got popular with something having to do with, like, YouTube. I think they made, like, a bunch of YouTube videos that are really, really highly watched on the site. I don't know. They have a lot of crazy shit going on. They have a lot of stuff going for them. They're actually, they mentioned at the Q&A that the Radio Silence guys, like I said, it's four guys that do this together. They're actually in talks with Lionsgate to direct a new Frankenstein film, which is pretty ridiculous for guys starting out as filmmakers. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because to kind of touch on your point about, like, the term filmmaker being very loose.
It's a good and a bad thing.
Right. I don't know. I just don't see the bad in it. I mean, I think being a musician and having had a band and, you know, having felt that way, like, we can get equipment and we can put our stuff out, I think that makes you a musician. Like, if that's what you do.
It does, but it also, it could be, like...
Well, I think the quality of it, in the end, if it's bad, that doesn't mean you're not a filmmaker still.
Right, right.
It just means that you're not making very good films.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can be... you could get a job anywhere and be called a car salesman.
Absolutely.
And be fucking horrible at it.
Yeah.
But you're still a car salesman because you have the tools to do what you need to do.
But I guess the idea is because things are distributed the way they are, I'm seeing a lot more terrible movies than good ones.
That speaks to the quality of the filmmaking, not the fact that they're not filmmakers.
I just think that some of that,
I mean, if you and I decided, hey, you know what? I mean, you're even talking about making, like, a film or a short film.
If it's terrible,
you know?
and it doesn't get anywhere, then that's...
But that's a matter of opinion. That's subjective.
You're right. You're absolutely
right. You may look at your film when you're done and be like, this is horrible. I'm not putting this out.
And then
you'll show it to me and you're like, Ronald, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Right,
you cannot say that.
Right.
But it's just, I don't know. I feel like...
I guess the problem is, though, like, what happens is the... I think that there has to be some sort of, like, stance on when are we going to stop doing the same types of shit over and over again? I mean, like,
When it stops selling tickets.
Nudity isn't a means to make good movies. I mean, those things don't do well. You know what I mean? Like, not necessarily.
Oh, no, no, I agree.
So I guess that's one point about it. I think that it's cheap thrills. Like, it's like, for them, it's like, oh, this beautiful woman is showing her breasts.
Right.
But the fucking movie sucks. There were certain ones in there. I don't want to just... Some of them were really bad to me.
No, I agree with you.
I mean, really bad. Like, oh.
The one that, I mean... I don't want to sound like I'm not agreeing completely with what you're saying. I'm saying that the filmmaking thing, I think, is very subjective. And I think if you have a vision and you have access to equipment or whatever the hell it is, make it.
Right.
Like, I would love to be able to say I'm a filmmaker, you know, write a script and see it realized.
But you wouldn't have breasts for an hour and a half, though. Like, there's not an hour and a half of breasts.
Let's be honest. If you count the screen time, there's probably 40 seconds.
You know what I'm talking about, though. Like, there's an integrity.
Oh, dude, I get it. It's a crutch for some people.
It's a super crutch.
What do we do in this scene? Oh, let's take her top off.
Right.
I get what you're saying. I totally agree with that.
Because, you know, the pretty girl, you're like, oh, come on, tits. Yeah.
You're just waiting for it.
Right.
And that's the deliver is what they do.
Right.
But I agree with you. I just think that the quality of these films, like, I think part of it's the quality is intentionally not looking good, physical quality.
Because of the
context that it's in with the VHS tapes. But, and then working, I mean, whether or not the movies are good, that's...
Working in the special effects with the VHS sort of feel to it was pretty cool, too. Like, the blurring sort of guy.
Oh, yeah, like, using tracking, like, yeah, as, like, a special... Like, yeah, I think that was really cool. But, yeah, you were mentioning, like, some of them were... Like, it's called Tuesday the 17th, which is the one by Glenn McQuaid. That's the one, like, where the kids go out to the woods and, like, they're like, oh, something's up, whatever. Fucking horrible. Like, I mean, it had a kind of a cool idea for, like, it was kind of like this meta take on, like, who the killer was. Like, watching a VHS tape of something that only appears when there's tracking and disturbance in the film. Like, that's kind of cool, I guess, but the execution was fucking horrible.
The story.
That's what I'm saying I can agree with you on. That's just not good quality.
Like, what was that?
Yeah. Not good.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah. Totally.
But the bad stories. You know,
the ones that got cut.
Right. The ones that are like, you're like, what is this? That was a bad story. So
yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, I guess my whole thing is that a lot of people, like, people that we went to this film with, like, every one of our friends pretty much hated it. Or that I was able to talk to. Only one of them besides me liked it. I mean, I liked the idea of the film. I liked most of the shorts. A lot of people have issue with the wraparound. I think the wraparound is actually really weak.
It is very weak.
That was directed by Adam Wingard, and I don't know, I think it's a cool idea, not great execution. The film has a lot of buzz going for it. It got picked up by Magnolia. It's coming out on video on demand in August.
There's a second one coming out.
Yeah, and they're already talking about a sequel. I mean, the movie's already been, like, it's got enough buzz that it said, this is successful. They made it for nothing.
Right.
Like, look at it, and you can tell they made it for nothing. You know, it was the horror darling of Sundance, so South by Southwest, pretty much everywhere it's been. The screening that we went to, it was fairly packed. It was a really big theater, though, at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's coming out in theaters on October 5th. Like, that's my birthday. Like, you know, the perfect time to put a horror movie out. If it makes anything, it's a huge success.
Yeah. I think that it's the cool part about it, the thing it really has going for it, is the fact that it looks so gritty. That always appeals to people. I mean, I know this is like a weird comparison, but it almost reminds me of sort of like when things were presented, like, why am I relating this to porn? But, like, the whole idea of, like, oh, this is on a bus. This is real. These are real people. I think that because it's presented like that, I think that it will it'll get people. It grabs people. Just the idea that you're watching something horrific, something very strange, and it feels like something that you weren't necessarily supposed to see is going to lend itself to a lot of... it's going to be popular because of that. Now, did I hate this movie? Absolutely not. And I think, actually, the second one's probably going to be better than this one. I think because it has the tone's been set, the format's been set, and I think that the next one's going to be more ambitious.
Sure.
Have more, you know, commit more to the format. I think the wraparound could be better, you know.
Yeah, the wraparound is, I mean, admittedly, it's pretty weak. I mean, especially, not to ruin anything, but, like, especially where it goes towards the end of the film and, like, you know, how it's kind of resolved. It's kind of, you know, nothing special at all, in my opinion.
But, I mean, so...
You know something else I pull out of this film? Like, I don't know, this is sort of related.
Right.
I think we mentioned the innkeepers before. I don't understand, like, I don't get the love for Ty West. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I, like, maybe I need either. To visit his films again.
Right.
Like, I did not like the innkeepers that much.
Man, people were kind of crazy when his name was mentioned.
Yeah, like, people, like, love him. And, I mean, he's got such a following... In that community, and
I think it's his name, man.
Ty West. It's a pretty
such
cool name.
A cool ass name.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a cool name. I liked House of the Devil. I mean, like, that was a movie that was built up like crazy for me, and it definitely let me down. But I still liked it a little bit.
Right.
But I don't know. Like, his pacing is so slow and deliberate. Like, it kind of just goes nowhere in some cases. But I don't know. He's like the darling. Like, everybody was going crazy when they mentioned him.
Yeah, it was weird.
And his short in the film is not. It's got a cool reveal at the end. I like the third act of it, but, you know, that's the one that you're referring to that's really slow.
Yeah.
It really is slow.
Slow as hell. But,
but I don't know. VHS, I mean, it was a pretty cool screen to go to. Q&As are always a blast. Again, it's coming out, video on demand, October in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start our little system when we talk about films. We're going to go with a yes, no, maybe so in terms of rating them.
Right.
So I'd give it a yes. What would you go with?
Maybe so.
Okay.
Maybe
so. The next film that we're going to move on to is a movie called Save the Date. It's a film that we both were able to see at the festival. Directed by a young filmmaker named Michael Mohan, who actually I saw a film of his last year at the festival called XX, a short film.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. And this is kind of... this movie's pretty fucking big. I mean, like,
yeah.
When I'm reading this film, I mean, like, when I'm seeing it, it looks physically, you know, like, great. Cast is amazing. Cast is beautiful. The film looks really nice. This is the film that, like, we talk about quality, both quality in terms of the aesthetic of the film and also of the filmmaking. This is a big step up from what we're talking about in terms of VHS.
It is.
On both levels. Basically, Save the Date stars Alison Brie, Lizzie Kaplan. Most people know Lizzie Kaplan from, like, Party Down. She had a little role in True Blood.
Yeah.
Alison Brie from Community, of course. She's had a couple episodes of Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Martin Starr from Freaks and Geeks, also in Party Down. Jeffrey Arend, who, I don't know, most people probably know him from 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
Mark Weber. I mean, a really, really cool cast. And basically, you know, it's a romantic comedy drama about... relationships, planning for them.
Yeah.
You know, you hope for the worst. No, hope for the best, plan for the worst kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And in every case in this film, it pretty much touches on both highs and lows.
Oh, yeah. So it revolves around two sisters, Beth and Sarah. Alison Brie is Beth, Lizzie Kaplan, Sarah. Beth's character is kind of heading towards commitment, marriage, all this stuff, whereas Sarah... it's kind of on the fence about commitment and relationships. And there's a big development at the beginning of the film where I guess we can say it. Her boyfriend, played by Jeffrey Arend, he is...
This is Lizzie Kaplan's boyfriend.
Yeah. In a band. He proposes to her mid-performance.
Right.
And she just runs away from it. And I guess it's at that point that she realizes that she doesn't necessarily want to be with this guy. She's not sure how she feels about the commitment. And so they break up, and it kind of takes place from there. And it's about the heartache, some of the feelings that you feel when you know that person's not the one, you're not sure, when you meet somebody new. It's interesting. It's really real. I mean, I think that's what one of the things that makes it interesting is that the dialogue is so real.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing of it in the beginning is kind of slow. But once it picks up, you realize why Michael Mohan is the writer that he is. It's a really well-written story. That dynamic between Beth and Sarah is really interesting because although I'm under the impression that Beth's character is younger, she almost is like the older sister to Sarah.
Right.
You know, kind of heavily judgmental. She knows what she wants out of life. And Sarah is a starving artist that kind of wants to find her way in the world. And it's about just how things develop between them. Now, Kevin, played by Jeffrey Arend, and Martin Starr's character are in a band together.
Right.
Close. And it's interesting to see how different they go in terms of their directions. Kind of suffering. It's interesting how a broken relationship can affect everybody in a circle of friends.
Well, that's what's the, I think that's the biggest takeaway from the film is that, you know, you have these two sisters that are so close. They're best friends, you know, for the most part. And you have one that's very sure of what they want in life and one that's maybe not so sure and, you know, questioning a lot and very uncertain. And, you know, you see the move on one part, which was Sarah deciding to say no. I mean, you also see that she was even apprehensive about moving in with Kevin. But when she does say no, and, you know, it's really interesting to see how it affects. I mean, honestly, having gone through that, like in a situation where, like, you know, you have a girlfriend that you're with for a long time. You know, you break up, how it affects the group of friends, where the ties are cut, you know, how it's awkward, you know, when you have those mutual friends or when you see each other publicly still. And it touches on a lot of that, which is kind of cool. And even Allison Brie and Martin Starr's character, Andrew, like, they're the ones that are, you know, they're engaged. They live together. They're so sure what they want. They are affected in a way by this breakup and by how, you know, in a whirl Sarah is, that it kind of starts to make them question what they're doing, you know, like they kind of are in like this autopilot thing where they're just like, oh yeah, we're married, we love each other, or we're engaged, we love each other, we live together, we finish each other's sentences, I always bring you coffee and we're happy.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, are we happy? Because, you know, I'm concerned with this now, and, you know, we're talking about you not being interested in helping me plan. It's kind of cool because, I mean, like, not most romantic comedies talk a lot about our two leads. And I think it's kind of cool with this film. We have a lead, and I think that's really following Sarah's journey, Lizzie Kaplan. But, I mean, there's a lot of minor characters, I guess you would call, that get a lot of screen time. And you get to see a lot of their relationships, too. We even get a glimpse of Beth and Sarah's parents and, like, what they have going on and, you know, things like that. But, you know, it's kind of cool. I really like that about the film, is the fact that it touched on, like, the whole world. Yeah. That was affected, you know, even this little microcosm of these little group of friends and how it touches everybody. And then, you know, into the picture comes Mark Webber's character, Jonathan. And, you know, he's just like the nicest guy ever. Like, he's smart. He's a good looking dude. You know, he's charming. He's
loved this girl. Like, he
goes to her bookstore to buy books, even though there's a university bookstore where he goes to school, because he just thinks she's amazing. And, you know, they meet by chance the night that, you know, that Kevin proposes and, you know, is unfortunately denied. And he doesn't really even look at it as an opportunity. Like, he's just still that nice guy, respectful. And, like, when he finally sees her and, you know, they start chatting, you know, he's still like, you know, is it okay that we're talking like this? Are you okay? Like, he's just a really good guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you find out that he's been through bad things before. Like, he had a divorce, you know, and he just is a person that is just, you know, very, very open, very honest, very caring. And I loved his character. I mean, really did.
I loved him too. Like,
And it's kind of cool because Mark Webber, a lot of times, he's kind of like, he's been in some heavy, heavy films.
Right.
And it's kind of cool to see him being like, kind of smiling all the time, you know, making women swoon and all this shit.
I think it was really well done. I think the one thing that's also very cool is love is sloppy and weird, and people have baggage, and it doesn't always happen the way you see it on TV. Like, you meet somebody, and a lot of the times, I have a theory about relationships. Normally, when you meet somebody, they're either going in something or coming out of something. You never meet somebody when they're completely single. They're always, like, leaving something, normally. They're like, I'm kind of dealing with this person. I'm not sure about. Right. And that's life, man.
Right.
And that's one thing that you see in this. Like, everybody has something that they're kind of attached to emotionally that in some cases you really have to let go of. And there may be like a past relationship or something like that. And once you look towards the future, look towards the idea of love, I mean, some good things can come out of it, no matter how sloppy they are.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good themes in the movie. I mean, I don't know. Some of the things that just didn't, I don't know, I was telling you, like, I had a lot of trouble, like, just liking
Lizzie Kaplan's character.
Yeah, liking it's Beth or no, Sarah.
Yeah.
Which one is Lizzie Kaplan? I can't remember.
It is Sarah.
Sarah, right.
Sarah's character.
I don't know, like, I feel like her roller coaster about what she wants, what she doesn't want, what she wants, what she doesn't want. Like, and I know that's how life is, you know, it's very real. That's how women are. I know, like, we all know this. Even guys are like that, you know. One minute you want a Snickers bar, one minute you want a Almond Joy. I don't know.
She did it on everybody's time, which was weird to me.
That's what bothered me about it, is that, like, everyone was there for her. And, you know, I had a lot of time in the film where I was like, do I really even care that she's happy?
Right.
You know, I liked the character so much. Like, even even Jeffrey Aaron's character, like, he was a nice guy. Like, he was a nice guy, too. You know, we talk about Mark Webber, but she's been blessed with two really nice guys. And, like, I just feel like she's so confused with what she wants. And maybe she has that journey for the film, and by the end of the film, she has a little bit of clarity, I guess. But, I don't know, there were definitely times where, like, you know, just the levity that I was hoping to find in that character didn't really shine through. And, you know, I was like, man, I don't really even want him to end up with her.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't even really care what happens to her. I care more about what's happening with Beth and, you know, her boy or her fiance.
She did something that I really don't like that happens in real life. She had to villainize her ex in order to feel like it was worth breaking up for. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like that's a weird thing when people do that. Like, because they messed up, they're like, well, they kind of villainized the ex to make it seem like, you know, it was justified that they did all the horrible things that they did. And that was strange.
It really, I mean, I had quite an issue with that. Like, I don't know. You really want to try to get behind somebody and you really want to try to, like,
right.
You know, root for them, I guess. But I don't know. I had issue with that throughout the film. I think the other characters were really well written. I mean, most people were likable yet flawed. And I like that everybody had their own little flaws.
Yeah.
I don't know, just some issue with her. I don't know. The filmmaker, actually, he had a really good Q&A. I asked him during the Q&A about the cast. I mean, how the hell he came up with such an amazing cast.
Right.
You know, this is like one of his first full-length features. I think he maybe made one more, but... I mean, and it's all about who you know. I mean, pretty much the short of it was like somebody that he worked with on XX knew somebody who knew somebody... who got Lizzie Kaplan involved, because he said he's watching Party Down at Home one night, and he's like, you know what, she needs to be Sarah. Right. And it happened. And then she's like, I need to have Mark Webber in this movie, but I don't know if Lizzie's going to want to be in it, because, like, you know, they have sex, and it might be awkward, whatever. And he's like, she comes in for the reading, and she suggests Mark Webber to him. So it was like a perfect storm of everything's worth. I'm like, dude, that's incredible that, like, this cast came together on such a shoestring budget. I mean, these are, like, up-and-coming people. And not only that, Martin Starr and Jeffrey Aaron, who are normally in roles that are just, like, straight-up comedy, goofball, funny guys, they get a lot of nice scenes to chew in this film.
Yeah, they do,
like, man. Martin Starr is really good in this movie.
Yeah.
When he gets serious, when he's really coming to terms with what he wants to do with this engagement. Really solid performances by both of them.
Definitely.
You know, guys that normally you just kind of look at and laugh. Both because they look kind of goofy and they are pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
But save the date, he also mentioned, the filmmaker, that they did have a deal for distribution. They haven't announced who it was yet. It should be announced, actually, maybe even by the time this podcast hits the web. But sometime this week, he said it was going to be publicly announced through a press release. So I'm sure you may have a chance to see it in theaters soon. Pretty cool film. I did like it. I had some issues with the lead.
Yeah, I got you.
But I'm going to go ahead and say yes to see it.
Yes. I thought it was good.
Not
the best romantic comedy I've ever seen in my life, but it was definitely
different. It was different.
And I think he's going to get better and better and better.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So.
Now, the last film that I'm going to mention, you didn't have a chance to come with me to see, unfortunately.
No, and I really wanted to.
And this is a film that, like, to be honest, I remember seeing this film, like, months ago. I'm always on that site, Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it. Basically, it's a crowdsourcing, like, for funding ideas, you know, design ideas, movies, music, whatever you have, you know, you can basically get people to support you with it and pledge money. Well, I read about this film on there, just looking through some of the, you know, creative side of the projects, and it's called Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
This film is directed by Chris James Thompson, and I remember seeing it on Kickstarter. He was trying to raise $15,000. You know, he was successfully funded for the film. He basically had been paying for the film with credit cards that he got and maxed out.
Wow.
This is his first feature film. He'd made some other shorts working with other filmmakers. He's from Milwaukee. And I just remember reading it and be like, this is such a cool idea for a movie. It's like, it's hard to explain really what it is, but it's really talking about the lead up to Jeffrey Dahmer being, you know, basically caught. You know, it's a documentary that mixes some feature film elements. It mixes some animation. It mixes interviews with the medical examiner, the police detective, neighbors of Jeffrey Dahmer, people that, you know, were around him up to the point, you know, in 91 when he was arrested. And it's just insane. Like, I just thought it was such a cool idea when I saw it on Kickstarter. And I was like, you know, if I had the money at that point, I would have probably backed it. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't at that point. But I wish I had, because I finally got to see it. When I saw it on the festival guide, I was like, I got to see it. And it was my favorite film at the festival. We didn't see a ton, but Jeff was incredible. I love documentary. I love creativity. I love new filmmakers that just go with edgy content. And it's like, oh, this is a documentary about Jeffrey Dahmer. Like, only serial killer people are going to want to see this. Like I said before, I have a weird fascination with serial killers and, like, their mindset. And just not them, but the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And this film is a blast to watch, as weird as that sounds. And I'm sorry if I offend anybody by saying that.
Right, right.
The families, anybody listening to this that, you know, had a personal effect from this horrible, horrible person. I think it's a really, really cool movie. One of the cool things about it, like I said, is that it mixes the documentary with the live. So there is an actor, you know, he basically is playing Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, and it's like interstitial pieces. Like, through the documentary footage, we're led up to a certain point when he's eventually caught.
Mm.
And, you know, we basically see him, we follow him, like, as he's going through town, like, buying stuff like goldfish and, you know, eating. And, you know, and it's very, very, and the cool thing about it is as the film goes along, the clips that we see go from very, very, you know, slight and mundane and just kind of like, this is kind of like, he's just a guy, you know, he's a little creepy, but he's just a guy, to getting more and more creepy. Like, he's buying barrels and he's buying bleach and he's checking into hotels with guys that aren't checking out. You know, it's things like that. And it's kind of like, and that feature footage is mixed in with this interview and it escalates with the documentary piece, which is really, really cool. The interviews that Chris was able to get is, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm amazed by it. To be able to be interviewing, like, the medical examiner, Jeffrey Jensen, and the lead detective on the case, Patrick Kennedy, and actually his direct neighbor, which was Pamela, it's just such a cool little tripod of people to be popping up in this film. I would definitely recommend it for anybody that is interested in, you know, one documentary film, you know, kind of new direction documentary film, you know, whatever. I would just go in with the notion that, you know, this is a kind of a mix-up of different film genres, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Q&A was probably the coolest Q&A I've ever been to. The filmmaker was there, Chris James Thompson, as well as the actual lead police detective, Patrick Kennedy. And the audience was like, we were actually, the screening that I saw, I was sitting right by John Waters was there.
Mm-hmm.
And John Waters was like totally into it. Like, really? He was asking questions. I asked questions. Everybody was asking. And they were so amazing. Like, all the answers were so directed. And it was really cool to see somebody there. Like, even though Jeffrey Dahmer was murdered in prison, you know, to have a detective there talking about, you know, having his one-on-one interview time beyond watching on the screen, like seeing him in person talking. It was incredible, you know, to witness that, you know, just to see the diligence that went into making the film from somebody that literally was getting credit card after credit card after credit card. We talked about filmmakers earlier in the podcast.
Yeah.
That is what I'm talking about. This film is quality. They're currently looking for distribution. I was talking to Chris after the screening. You know, he's had some sales reps trying to get distribution, whether it's on TV or in theaters. I don't know that I see this film making it to theaters, really. It's probably going to be something that's on TV or, you know, through digital distribution or whatnot. It'd be cool
if, like, HBO picked it up.
Something like that. I can see something like that happening.
Yeah.
But such a cool guy. I wish nothing but the best for that filmmaker. I mean, he's so humble. And, I mean, granted, nobody knows you yet. And who's to say if he gets famous if he's going to be humble. But, I mean, just the nicest guy. And, you know, to talk about all the homework that went into it was amazing. And then thinking about watching that Kickstarter video where he's basically begging for money, you know, and to see that it got funded and he was able to make it and it's making the rounds at the festivals that's amazing to me.
Yeah. To see the process,
guy that got his hand on a camera and some credit cards makes a film that's at film festivals and it possibly, maybe it ends up on HBO.
Yeah. And this is really random. What do you think about Jeffrey Dahmer after you saw the movie?
It's weird. Like, you know, there's definitely, you walk out of the film almost for an instant feeling like, you know, you don't want to judge him, you know, like you, even through the Q&A, like the detective talked about how you didn't really judge him. The detective is admittedly like kind of like a religious man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying like, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer was a Lutheran. So a lot of their conversations, him being Catholic and Jeffrey being Lutheran, they had a lot of conversation about religion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, about, you know, how he walked away from it, not really judging him for the crimes that he'd done. You know, like he obviously had a lot of things wrong with him, a lot of family stuff from the past and just mental issues. But I don't know. I mean, I still think about the situation and it's 17 people, you know, were murdered, and not just murdered, but like, you know, eaten, cannibalism, you know, putting them in barrels with acids that, you know, melt their, I mean, it's just insane. It's a monster. I mean, he was a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, I still believe that. But the way the film is laid out is a really cool journey because you definitely, you start at point A where it's kind of like, he's the guy on the bus buying a goldfish, you know, and seeing the creation of and the execution of these horrible things. And like I said earlier, the thing that really take away from this film is, it's not just about him. There's been tons of documentaries about Jeffrey Dahmer, about serial killers. There's been feature films about Jeffrey Dahmer, like shitty horror films about him that are just stupid feature, fiction novels. I mean, feature films that are all fiction, just based around his name.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing about this movie is that it talks a lot about his effect on his community. You know, the people that he lived in. He lived in a very, very low income, heavily African-American neighborhood, you know, that in Milwaukee that, you know, everyone, you know, the Pamela, the woman that his neighbor is like, what's the white guy doing living here? You know, he lived there because he worked, it was so close to where he worked. You know, he's a pretty practical person when it came to that. And seeing those pieces of his life and like how his relationships were with his neighbors. And I don't know, it's a really kind of interesting way to watch it, you know, to see the effect it had on the police department, you know, on the government in Milwaukee, on the politicians, you know, things like. It's cool, man. It's just a really interesting take. It's a short film. It's I think maybe 90 minutes or something like that. A nice blend of different types of filmmaking. I think Chris has a lot of talent. I mean, I hope things. I know I sound super subjective here because I got to meet him and talk to him, but I mean, the dude. I mean, I just, you know, you meet some people and you're just like, I hope things work out for that guy. I mean, and to be so passionate about something that most people be like, that's fucking weird, dude. Like. Maybe he's a little weird. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. Maybe a lot of people that are interested in these kinds of things are weird. But it's studying, you know, society. And I mean, and when you think about society, you think about the best of people and the worst of people. And this is probably one of the worst.
Yeah.
And, you know, to look about how things affected him and his neighbors and his friends. And it's kind of cool. I mean, it's a good watch.
Sounds interesting.
That's a big, big, big yes on my scale.
I want to see it. So
yeah, you definitely need to check it out. I wish you could have come with me to see it. Those are basically the films we saw at the festival. We didn't really get as deep into it as we thought we would. We're going to check out some more stuff that we got some access to for, like, screeners and things like that.
Yeah.
And maybe mention them on some later podcasts. But, like we said, VHS does have distribution through Magnolia. It's going to be on video on demand at the end of August and on in select theaters in October. Save the Date does have distribution. I would check the film's official site for more updates on that.
Yeah.
And Jeff is currently looking for distribution, whether it's in theaters or on TV. I would imagine it'd probably be on television. But either way, definitely, definitely keep your eye out for Jeff. Really, really nice documentary film. Definitely worth checking out. What else you got? Anything? Did you want to throw out there anything?
Yeah, I saw a documentary called Shut Up, Little Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically about two neighbors. So two kids moved into a neighborhood with in L.A. Was it L.A.? Really, really, really not poor neighborhood, but terrible apartment. And while they were there, they basically discovered that they had neighbors that argued every day without fail, all day. So they were really afraid of it at first because it was like, shut up, I'll kill you, blah, blah, blah. But then they decided to tape it, and what they gathered was hundreds of hours of these guys arguing, and they wound up distributing these tapes called Shut Up, Little Man, that had bits and pieces of their arguments that blossomed into CD distribution. Money was made, plays were made out of it, puppet shows were made out of it, and it became a huge underground thing that kind of spread throughout the United States. It made it to the Rolling Stone magazines. It made it to, like, it's mentioned on Pitchfork every once in a while. Wow. It made it really far out. And this is before social media was a huge thing. It was, like, early 90s is when it started to kind of hit. But it's a really cool documentary. It's now on Netflix. I think it's gonna be in some theaters pretty soon. It's Tribeca distributing these films throughout a couple indie movie theaters. So I think it's worth checking out. Shut Up, Little Man is on Netflix now. So
I'll definitely check it out. Yeah. Sounds cool.
It's insane.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
So the weird part about it, too, is that one is a homosexual male.
Right.
And then the other hates him.
Right.
And always calls him a fag. And,
yeah.
You're going to die.
So homosexual and homophobic.
Yes. And as you listen to the story, you find out that it's a little more to the story than that. But their arguments are incredible. Like, they're not normal. Yeah. It almost reminds me of my grandma and my granddad when they used to argue. They were, like, intense arguments.
Like, legit.
Legit. Things that you say about somebody that you can only know for 10, sure. 20 years. Sure. You know what I mean? So.
Right on, man. All right, cool. That's on Netflix?
Netflix, yep.
All right, cool. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode. You know, like I said before, we're working on a new website. We should hopefully have that moving in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Knock on wood. As always, you know, we have the iTunes, Mixcloud, Pinterest, again, still doing really well. If you have any questions, suggestions for different topics for the show, or any feedback for any of the films that we talked about in this episode, feel free to shoot us an email at movieschmovie@gmail.com. And otherwise, I'm good to go. And thank you guys for listening. And as always, you've made our day.
Bye-bye.
See you later.